This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You may have heard about the Nevada convention scandal last weekend, where Bernie Sanders' supporters were accused of being violent. Well, the state of Nevada held its primary caucus earlier this year, so why a convention now? The rules of the Nevada primary are so complicated that if you're confused, don't worry, most people are. And that confusion may be a big part of the frustrations that erupted last weekend. Despite a win for Sanders in the Oregon primary and a practical tie with Hillary Clinton in Kentucky that followed, mainstream media are accusing Sanders of being a spoiler and pointing to the Nevada convention as a reason why the renegade senator and presidential candidate ought to simply let Clinton claim the Democratic nomination. My guest is Karen Bernal. She's the former chair of the California Democratic Party's Progressive Caucus. She's also a Sanders delegate in California. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks so much for joining us. So let's first talk about Nevada itself. The state, as I mentioned, had its caucus in early April. You know, it took me a while to just wrap my head around the idea of a caucus, and then here's a convention. Clinton was declared the winner in that caucus, but then some said Sanders actually won. What happened back in April in Nevada? Who actually won?
Well, Clinton won in a caucus that was highly questionable. Because of the fact that, number one, the state caucus was held on a Saturday, for instance, in an economy that runs on a weekend. If you consider Las Vegas, where the economy for the entire state is probably at its largest, and that on the weekend with the casinos and the tourist industry being, you know, the probably the busiest day of the week is a Saturday, Friday night, Saturday. It's perhaps the worst day to have a caucus. They had a caucus then. Many of the younger workers could not make it to the caucuses. So you basically had a demographic that was mostly retired people, some people that could get off that had 9-to-5 jobs. But there were a lot of people that were cut out of the process who could not make it because they could not leave work. For those at-large caucuses that they had at casino sites, for those casino workers, by and large, the casino management and the casino the management and the leadership of some of the unions, along with Harry Reid, were coordinated quite handily so that many of the people had to ask to get off to go to those caucuses. And, of course, management knew who supported Bernie and who supported Hillary, and it mattered greatly. That there were a lot of shenanigans, as you well know, regarding, you know, the Hillary folks posing as nurses, that a lot of the people that supported Bernie somehow were not able to go leave work, weren't given permission to go into caucus. And it all added right up to a stacked deck for Hillary.
So that was the caucus in early April. Then there was the convention that followed this past weekend. What was supposed to be decided at the convention? Should it have been a simple case of here's who won the caucuses, that person gets a proportionate number of delegates, and the other candidate gets the proportionate number of their delegates? Is that what's supposed to happen? What did actually happen?
Well, what happened in between time was that there was this county conventions, and at those county conventions, the Bernie delegates organized themselves, and they actually not only closed the gap, but they added more delegates to the point where they actually won the state. So,
and you can do that because Nevada's whole system is so complicated. I mean, it sounds bizarre that you can do that after the actual caucus.
That's right. It's a three-step process.
Wow.
And so what happened is that in the statewide caucuses, the one where average voters go to caucus, if they can make it, they then decide at that caucus, they pick delegates to go to the county conventions. And at the county conventions, they pick delegates that then go to the state convention. And so this past weekend, you had the state convention, And what happened there is that 56 of the 64 delegates were denied their credentials.
These are Sanders delegates.
Yeah, those are Sanders delegates. I've heard that anywhere between 8 to 10 Hillary delegates also were denied, though some did appeal that standing before the Credentials Committee, and in some cases, they were given back their credentials. Most of them were not, though, the Bernie delegates in particular.
So let's talk about the chaos that broke out. I actually want to play a video for you and our audience of one of the people present at the convention describing what was happening.
Now that literally the sheriff's department is coming into the building and trying to force us to leave. They have just entered from the back and back here. And they have moved to the front over here, and they are literally going to force us to leave the room when we called the meeting against everyone's verbal protests, slightly verbal protests. So anyways, as you can see, there are people at the front. They're very upset, and there are police, aka sheriffs, front.
Why were there sheriffs present, Karen? There were photographs that I saw literally of law enforcement officials, and at one point someone needed a medic.
Yes, yes. You know, it was really terrible because all of, what you're seeing is the culmination of things that started actually before the convention. You know, there's been a lot put out there that it's the fault of the Sanders supporters because they weren't aware of the rules and so on. In fact, the Sanders delegates were quite aware of the potential for some, let's say, procedural sophistry, and they raised concern about it. But they were told that everything was okay, that the rules were being followed. And before even Barbara Boxer got to speak, while there were still people in line in the beginning of this, there was a quick motion and gavel regarding the acceptance of these rules changes, which set the tone for the rest of the convention.
So people were frustrated because they realized early on that there was basically going to be some shenanigans taking place.
Yes, and the interesting story behind that is that these rules changes, which were in effect, you know, I would say illegitimately ratified at the beginning of the meeting there, themselves were said to have been voted on and recommended by a committee which did not have quorum in itself. I have asked for some friends to look into, who are delegates of the state party there, to look into whether or not those proposed rules changes were given actually even proper notice to the executive board, which met by teleconference. Most rule changes require typically in any given organization at least a 30 days rules notice, a noticing requirement, if you're going to vote on rules changes. I'm not even sure that happened, let alone the fact that there was no quorum when they voted for these proposed rules changes. So what we're seeing is what would appear to be, illegitimate votes procedurally on top of illegitimate votes procedurally, and so on and so on. And then by the time you get to the end, of course, people are so angry and disenfranchised that what you're seeing is that frustration boiling over.
So there were a lot of accusations of violence on the part of Sanders supporters. Some independent media basically said they looked through all the tapes, then looked through all the anecdotes and couldn't find any instances of violence. But there was some shouting and verbal assaults. The person who presided over the convention, Roberta Lange, said that she received death threats. As far as you know, what sort of level of violence are we talking about here? I didn't see any evidence of physical violence, although that was implied in the media coverage.
Well, I think there's one instance of where a Sanders supporter during the height of the anger, I guess, at the close of the very precipitous close of the convention, raised a chair, but his own fellow Bernie supporters asked him to put it down, and which he quickly did, and that was it essentially. The only arrest that occurred was actually violence by a Hillary supporter on a Bernie supporter. And that was the only arrest that was recorded, and it was actually by a Hillary supporter. My friend, who is a delegate there, and who saw a lot of, who was in the middle of all that and saw that, said, well, actually, at no time did anyone feel unsafe. He said there were even kids and toddlers present. And yes, was there a lot of shouting? Yes, there was. And I'll be honest with you. I myself, just in my own state party, can remember a time or two on the convention floor where there has been things that have happened and people have grown very angry and have shouted things down. So the whole shouting in anger thing, well, that's part of politics. It happens occasionally. Insofar as the threats and the death threats, no, I would imagine most Bernie supporters, if not all Bernie supporters, would condemn such a thing. We know after checking that the people that did send those things, those unfortunate messages, were people that were out of state watching it happen unfold. Mm-hmm. And very frustrated.
So would you say then that there's been this narrative built that the Sanders group and then by extension Bernie Sanders is seeing victory slip through their fingers, and so they're getting frustrated, they're getting angry, they're getting pushy, and the Clinton delegates are the ones following the rules, and they just simply want to go by the book and let their candidate win, which it's inevitable that she's going to win. Do you feel like this sort of simplistic narrative is being built?
Oh yeah, I mean, the first narrative. There's two reasons for that. One is that the reason we're hearing so much the stories of the reaction of the Bernie supporters, quite simply, is to obfuscate the actual crime. In other words, it's a distraction. The actual crime is the procedural sophistry that the party engaged in. And so to talk about Bernie supporters and their reaction to everything is a way to distract people from what actually they should be focusing on, which is what the DNC and the Nevada State Democratic Party engaged in. By the way, those things, the kind of sophistry that they engaged in, are themselves rules violations. And the Sanders people did not, in fact, violate any rules. It was the Nevada State Democratic Party in collusion with DNC members, perhaps, that did those very things. Hmm. And that's the story that's missing, because everyone is focused on the behavior of some Bernie supporters that they think happened. The other thing is that we have, as Bernie supporters and Bernie himself, and many people who have participated in these various state primaries and caucuses, have indeed followed the rules. What the real story is how many rules have been bent by the people who are running these processes, and then what they talk about is the reaction to when it is being perpetrated upon the people that think that they're going into a fair process and participating in a fair democratic process, only to learn that the process is definitely stacked against them.
Let's talk about Oregon and Kentucky. Sanders won Oregon and very narrowly lost Kentucky by like 0.5%. Do those victories mean anything? in terms of his pathway to the nomination?
Of course it is. And by the way, with Kentucky, the jury is still out on that. I mean, there is a lot of there are a lot of questions. There is, in fact, as far as I know, there may be a recount in one of the counties. We know that Kentucky uses those infamous Diebold voting machines, of which, you know, even Howard Dean years ago, at a time when he wasn't a Hillary supporter, but a different sort of politician, demonstrated how easy it is to flip votes in a Diebold machine. There are questions that are still surrounding the vote count there in some counties, particularly Pike County. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen there. So to win a vote by a half of 1% for Clinton is definitely no victory for her. In Oregon, were it not for literally one vote in one county, Sanders would have won every single county in the state.
I see. It's interesting to see media coverage of these. Every time Sanders barely loses an election, the media narrative is, well, he needed that state, and now he's done for. And then he'll go on to win a few more. He might lose one very narrowly, and then the media pronounce, well, that's the end of his nomination. Okay, so the big prize that's coming up is June 7th here in California, where you are, where I am. The deadline to change registration for Californian voters is May 23rd. That's basically, if you want to vote in the Democratic primary, you either have to be registered Democrat or decline to state. So it's sort of a semi-open primary, if you will. And that may favor Sanders because he's done much better in open primaries, given that his supporters are often largely drawn from independents. What do you expect from California? Polls are predicting a Clinton win.
Well, I think that actually this is going to be a good state for Sanders if the organizing continues along the way it is. If the enthusiasm I've seen, I'm here in Sacramento, the enthusiasm I've seen on the ground here is pretty amazing. And from what we can see so far of his rallies around the state, I don't think that anyone has lost any hope and enthusiasm.
Right. He spoke, by the way, to an enormous crowd at the campus of Cal State Domingo Hills just this week.
Yeah. So for whatever, you know, reason, the supporters in California definitely did not get the memo that the primary is over. So they're going to have their vote. And I would just say, remind everyone to make sure, you know, it's good to be safe here. So make sure that you check your registration. If you're listed as an American Independent Party, please realize that you're not an independent and that you are, in fact, will not be able to vote for Sanders. You will have to re-register if you're American Independent, Green, or Peace and Freedom, to either no party preference or Democratic, and you have until Tuesday, May 23rd, to do it. So I hope that everyone just takes a moment to check themselves out.
Karen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you in California.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Sonali.
Karen Bernal is a former chair of the California Democratic Party's Progressive Caucus. She's a Sanders delegate in California. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.